The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Janice Peary from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Read to Succeed, a program especially for young children. This month is February, and when you think about February, what's the first important day that pops into your mind? I will guess that it is Valentine's Day. And Valentine's Day is the 14th of February. This book is called The Night Before Valentine's Day by Natasha Wing. "'Twas the night before Valentine's Day, and all through the town, children were busy, not making a sound. They gathered their scissors, their glitter and glue, and pink and red paper, and paintbrushes, too. They made cards that read, 'Will you be mine?' and others that said, 'My true Valentine.' They trimmed giant hearts with stickers and lace, and added an arrow in just the right place. Then, marking the envelopes with each friend's name, they hoped that their friends were doing the same. And when they were done, they slept snug in their beds, while visions of candy hearts danced in their heads. The very next morning was Valentine's Day. They grabbed all their cards and went on their way. And here's a picture of all the kids running out to the school bus. And the first girl on board has made a card specially for the bus driver, who looks very happy to be getting it. The classroom was decked out in pink, red, and white, with balloons and streamers so festive and bright. Someone dropped by with a giant bouquet addressed to the teacher, who blushed right away. The card was signed, "From a Secret Admirer," but everyone knew it was Mr. O'Meyer. They played Pin the Heart and won goofy toys, and girls ran away from kissy-faced boys. The art teacher came and painted kids' faces. She put hearts on cheeks and sillier places. And there's two kids who have Valentine's painted on their nose. At last it was time to deliver the cards. Look, one for Lisa and Jim and Bernard. They opened them up and they read them and smiled and laughed at the cards that were totally wild. Then they ate the goodies, sweet cherries and grapes, and drank punch with ice cubes in little heart shapes. There also are some cupcakes there with pink frosting and little red candy hearts on top. And just when they thought that the party was done, a knock on the door came at 1:15. When what to their wondering eyes should appear but the principal himself, dressed in full Cupid gear. His arrows, how golden! His bow curved and tight. The wig that he wore was a common, comical sight. On his head he has a big, fluffy, curly wig that was yellow. He had a tie on with pink with red hearts. He had wings. He had a red bow, and his arrows were golden looking. And on his feet, he had red socks with little white hearts. He really did look silly. He spoke not a word and was gone in a minute, leaving a present behind. Now, what could be in it? They read Cupid's note as he leapt down the hall. Happy Valentine's Day to one and to all. And guess what was in the present that the principal brought to this classroom? Well, they opened it up, and there inside was a cute little hamster for the class to keep and to look after. And can you imagine what the name of this little hamster might be? I think it just might be Valentine. And that's the end of that book. Now, there's another day in February that we often don't think about. It is called Groundhog Day. And it comes on the 2nd of February in a town with a very strange name, Punxsutawney, which is in Pennsylvania. A groundhog comes out of the hole, and if he sees his shadow reflected because the sun is shining, he runs back inside the hole. And that means winter is going to go on for at least 6 more weeks. If he comes out of the hole and does not run away, then that means there will be no more winter, and spring is coming nice and early. So, this book is called Punxsutawney Phyllis. Regularly, the groundhog is called Punxsutawney Phil, but this one is about Punxsutawney Phyllis, and it was written by Susanna Leonard Hill. Phyllis was not like other groundhogs. She liked to get up in February instead of in March. She liked to be out of doors instead of indoors. When the spring rain soaked the earth and everyone else huddled in the burrow, Phyllis splashed in puddles. "You're sopping wet," her mother scolded. "Well, I like the way the mud feels between my toes," Phyllis explained. Her mother shook her head and said to Phyllis's father, "That's Phyllis for you." When the stream water rushed icy cold and fierce between the banks, Phyllis went wading. "You'll catch a cold," Aunt Patsy warned. Phyllis's mother just shook her head. "That's Phyllis." When the August sun beat down, turning the meadow brown, Phyllis picked blackberries, warm and sweet. "You'll bake in this heat," Aunt Sassy cried. And guess what, Phyllis's mother said. "When I grow up," Phyllis said, "I'm going to be Punxsutawney Phil." "Don't be silly, dear," her mother said. "Punxsutawney Phil is a fellow." All the other grown-ups laughed, but Phyllis knew she could do it, even if no one took her seriously. And then, one February morning, Phyllis woke up early. She crawled out of bed and crept up the tunnel. The first light of morning shone at the mouth of the groundhog hole. From the big pine trees came a steady drip, drip, drip of snow melting. Running water whispered in the brook. The air was sharp, but something had changed about it. Spring was coming early. She skipped back down the tunnel to wait for Uncle Phil to wake up and make his prediction. "Phyllis, would you quit wiggling?" complained Phil Jr. "Yeah, Phyllis," said Pete. "Some of us are trying to sleep." "How can you sleep when spring is in the air?" asked Phyllis. Phil Jr. looked at Pete. "Only Phyllis would think spring was coming in the middle of winter," he said. "It's not the middle of winter," Phyllis said. "It's Groundhog Day." But Phil Jr. and Pete were already dozing off again. Pretty soon, Aunt Sassy got up and tried to wake up Uncle Phil. She shook him and tugged his whiskers. She shouted in his ear. Everyone else in the burrow woke up too, but Uncle Phil kept right on snoring. "What's all the ruckus?" asked old Grandfather Groundhog. "It's Groundhog Day," said Aunt Sassy, "and Phil is still asleep. I'm afraid he's getting too old for this job." "I'll do it," said Phyllis eagerly. Everyone laughed. "Punxsutawney Phil has never been a girl," said Pete. "And never will be," Phil Jr. taunted. "Nobody's going to get the job until Phil gives it up," said Aunt Sassy. "Now, how are we going to wake him?" "Dump snow on him," Phyllis suggested. "Good idea," said Aunt Sassy. And it worked. There shows poor Uncle Phil waking up with cold, cold, icy snow all over him. Uncle Phil grumbled. "It's time to get up," said Aunt Sassy. "It's Groundhog Day." "I'm sleepy," complained Uncle Phil. "If you're too tired," said Phyllis, "I'll be happy to do the job for you." "Harumph," said Uncle Phil. "Not just anyone can be Punxsutawney Phil." "Well, I'm not just anyone," said Phyllis. "Is your name Phil?" asked Uncle Phil. "No," Phyllis admitted. "But Punxsutawney Phil's real name isn't always Phil." "Yes, well," grumbled Uncle Phil, "but were you born on Groundhog Day?" "I was born the day after," Phyllis said. "Not good enough," said Uncle Phil. "Besides, you are a girl. When the time comes, one of those young fellows will fit the ticket." Phil Jr. and Pete smirked. "They can't even feel that spring is in the air," Phyllis said scornfully. Punxsutawney Phil looked at her and yawned. "We never have an early spring," he said. "In all my years as Punxsutawney Phil, it's never happened even once." "Well, it's going to happen this year," Phyllis said stubbornly. Aunt Patsy chuckled. "That's Phyllis," she said. Phyllis wished that people would stop saying that. "Phyllis, come up with me and see what the world looks like in February," said Uncle Phil. "Then you'll know I'm right." Phyllis couldn't believe her luck. They walked up the long tunnel and emerged into the light. Uncle Phil sat up on his hind legs and sniffed the air. "Just as I thought," he said, "6 more weeks of winter." "Early spring," said Phyllis. "Look at all that snow," said Uncle Phil. "Feel the cold." "The snow is melting," said Phyllis. "The water is running in the brook." Uncle Phil tilted his head and listened. "So it is," he said softly. "I just don't hear as well as I used to." "The chickadees are singing their spring song," said Phyllis. "I've never heard the chickadees on Groundhog Day," said Uncle Phil. "And look, Uncle Phil, no shadows." "My eyes aren't as clear as they used to be," said Uncle Phil. "And don't you smell the sweetness of spring?" asked Phyllis. Uncle Phil sniffed. "Just a hint," he murmured. "And there's something else," said Phyllis. She had finally figured out what had felt different about the spring all morning, about the air all morning. "Feel that wind? It's from the west. The spring zephyr." "Well, I'll be jiggered," said Uncle Phil. "Phyllis was right," Uncle Phil announced when they returned to the burrow. "We are going to have an early spring. It's time for me to retire." "But who will be the next Punxsutawney Phil?" asked Aunt Patsy. "I will," said Phil Jr. "No, I will," said Pete. "Sorry, boys," said Uncle Phil. "You missed the signs, too." "You can't mean," blustered Phil Jr. "Yes, boys," said Uncle Phil. "This time the best Phil for the job is a Phyllis." "But what about the rules?" whined Pete Jr. and Pete. "If Mother Nature can bend the rules once in a while," said Uncle Phil, "we can too. Phyllis heard the water in the brook and the song of birds. She saw that there was no shadow, and she felt the spring zephyr." "That's Phyllis," her mother said proudly. Phyllis grinned and said, "Punxsutawney Phyllis." And that is the end of that story about Groundhog Day. The next book we're going to read is called A Village Full of Valentines by James Stevenson. This book has many stories in it, but I'm going to read two of them for you. Mona, Tina, and Mary Lou. "I have an idea," said Mona. "What is it?" asked Tina. "Let's hear it," said Mary Lou. "Well, why don't we make Valentine's together this year?" "Great idea," said Tina. "It will save time, and we'll be working together," said Mary Lou. "And we'll have fun," said Mona. "I'll cut out the hearts with scissors," said Mona. "I'll paste on the frilly stuff," said Tina. "What will I do?" said Mary Lou. "You can address the envelope," said Mona. "Wait a minute," said Mary Lou. "That's no fun." "Okay," said Tina. "You can lick stamps." "Stamps are icky," said Mary Lou. "Why don't you lick stamps?" All right," said Mona. "You can crayon little flowers and hearts and things on the envelope. How's that?" "I don't want to do envelopes," said Mary Lou. "I want to do the insides." "We're doing insides," said Tina. "I want to use the scissors," said Mary Lou. "I had scissors first," said Mona. "I want to paste," said Mary Lou. "Wait," said Mona. "I have an idea." "What is it?" "Let's all do our own Valentine," said Mona. "Fine," said Tina. "Then we can surprise each other. And we can still be friends." So they all went home and got to work on their own Valentines. And that was a good way to end a fight, wasn't it? The other story I'm going to read to you from A Village Full of Valentines is called Gus. Everybody in the village liked Gus the tailor, and they all sent him valentines. Gus wished he could send a valentine back to each one, but he really didn't have time or the money to do so. This year, Gus decided things would be different. All year long, he saved bits of red thread in the back of his shop. By the summer, the thread had made a ball half as tall as Gus, and by February, the ball was higher than his head. Late in the afternoon before Valentine's Day, when most people were home having their supper, Gus pushed the big ball of thread out the door of his shop and down the icy street, rolling it like a snowball. The thread trailed behind him. An hour later, when he finally got back to his shop, the ball was almost gone. The next morning, Gus opened the shop as usual. The first customer was Veronica. "Would you sew a button on this coat, Gus?" she asked. "Certainly, Veronica," said Gus. "Oh, I almost forgot," said Veronica. "Today is Valentine's Day, isn't it?" "I believe it is, Veronica," said Gus. "Did you make any valentines?" asked Veronica. "One," said Gus. "Just one." Chapter 7. The Valentine Show. In the late afternoon, everybody in the village went to Sydney's barn to see the Valentine Show. They sat on piles of straw and watched the acts. First, there was a sweetheart ballet. "What in the world is that supposed to be?" asked Clifford. "It's a heart," said Vicky. "Well, it looks like two skunks and a fat bear to me," said Clifford. "And there's the bear holding a skunk on each hand, and the skunks have their tails up in the air and touching the tips of each other's tail, and they're making a heart, sort of." Then Lester came on stage. Lester was a snake. Now we're all going to sing, he said. All together now, watch my tail. One, two, let me call you sweetheart. Everybody sang the song and clapped. Hooray for Lester, they cried, and Lester bowed. Next, Clayton came on stage. Here's a special weather report, he said. A big cloud is headed our way. It doesn't look like rain exactly, or snow either. It looks like Valentine's. And a shower of paper Valentine's came floating down from the rafters where Mona, Tina, and Mary Lou were dumping paper bags full of hearts. Everybody cheered. Then Gus leaned over the railing at the top of the barn. Don't go home just yet, please, he called. You're all invited to come up here for cookies, cider, and one last Valentine. Everyone went up the stairs. Gus gave them cider and passed the cookies. Delicious, said Maureen. Not bad, said Murray. I don't see any Valentine, said Clifford. You said we'd get a Valentine. I almost forgot, said Gus, and he put down the cookies. I guess it's time for the Valentine, everyone. Where is it? Asked Beatrice. Yes, where? Said Miriam. Look out the window, said Gus. Everybody crowded round the windows and looked out. At first they didn't see anything, and then Tina cried. I see a red thread. I see it too, cried Mona. And then everybody saw the one red thread that was lying on the snow. It goes all around the entire village, said Clifford. It's in the shape of a heart, said Mona. It's a Valentine, said Mary Lou, a giant Valentine for all of us. And there was the heart, making a red string Valentine that was all around the village. It looked beautiful on the white snow. Everyone clapped and cheered. Thank you, Gus, they said. Thank you for the Valentine for all of us. Happy Valentine's Day, said Gus. This book is Everybody Sleeps, But Not Fred by Josh Snyder. Every kind of bird and beast in the west and in the east, way up high and way down deep, everybody has to sleep. But not Fred. Fred has a to-do list that you would not believe. In the jungle, toucans snooze, also sloths, and cockatoos, ignoring snoring striped hyenas, monkeys dream they're ballerinas, but not Fred. Fred has important jumping to do. Here shows Fred jumping around. On the farm, the chickens doze, the pigs nod off in stinky rows. Sheep lie in a woolly heap, count themselves, and then fall asleep. But not Fred. Fred is breaking the world shouting record. He can shout so loud, here it shows the barn exploding with his shouts, and all the pigs and the sheep and the chickens and even the monkeys go flying through the air. But that's just sort of imagining things, I think. Neath the ocean, whales relax, leaking bubbles fore and aft. Rocks by creatures, by currents in the deep, ocean creatures go to sleep. But not Fred. Fred is testing his horn collection. He's out on the boat in the middle of the ocean, and he has a huge, long horn, and he's playing it underwater, and all the fish are waking up and running away to escape. He has a bagpipe and a tuba and a French horn and a trumpet all in his boat, and he's going to try them all. Fred does not want to sleep. In their bunk beds underground, tired ants have settled down. Now too late to grab a snack. Anteaters all hit the sack. But not Fred. Fred is practicing his karate chops. And again, he's breaking things. He's scaring the anteater who fell asleep at the table. And the sheep and the toucan and the chicken that's still sitting on that monkey's head. Scary things that lurk and slink stop all that for 4D winks, like the snakes and stuff. Like other monsters not listed here. And monsters, too, if they existed. Here shows the monkey flossing his teeth and two monsters sitting on the counter brushing their teeth and a sheep with curlers. But Fred is not getting ready for bed. Fred is hunting the legendary Sasquatch, which is a big, furry monster, also called Bigfoot. And he's waking up everybody in their little beds, so everyone is angry with him. Having read a book or three, parents turn to poetry, reading from a book so boring that children soon are prone and snoring. There's a big bed with children sound asleep, the toucan and the chicken also, and the monkey hiding under the bed so he can sleep. But not Fred. Fred? Oh, Fred! Fred! Tomorrow Fred will run about and chop and jump and hunt and shout. But please, for now, don't make a peep. Just close the book and let Fred sleep. He finally fell asleep. He was so tired from being so busy that now no one can wake him up. And now time for a few little nursery rhymes before we go. This one is called The Roses Red, The Violets Blue, The Honey's Sweet, and So Are You. I drew thee to my Valentine. The lot was cast. And then I drew, and fortune said it should be you. And the last and least one is just a quick one. Dance to your daddy, my little baby. Dance to your daddy, my little lamb. You shall have an apple. You shall have a plum. You shall have a rattle basket when your daddy comes home. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Children's Story Hour. No, excuse me, of Read to Succeed. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Janice Peary, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 832-5138.